beginning in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week of June 23rd, 2006, this is the RAIN Report, available as a downloadable MP3 from arnewsline.org and now as a podcast from therainreport.com. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. This week, we conclude our series on BPL technology with a peek at Motorola's solution to the interference issue. Dick Illman, AH6EZ/W9, is recipient of the 2006 DARA Technical Excellence Award due to his engineering work with Motorola on their Access BPL interference solution. Here is an excerpt from his talk given at the Dayton Hamvention last month.
When we started developing our product back in late 2004, there were substantial issues out in the marketplace with interference. So people didn't seem to have figured out how to do it right at that point. And when I learned that Motorola was entering the marketplace, I wanted to make absolutely sure that we were doing the right thing. There were a lot of issues, you know, that we had to sort out. And in the process of sorting them out, you can really think of them in two different categories. There was an amateur radio category, and there was a Motorola category. I became sort of an educator of Motorola, since Motorola does a lot of VHF, UHF, 800, 900 megahertz, and so forth, but they weren't doing very much on HF. So I was the educator to tell them what amateur radio was, what the HF spectrum was like, why we needed to have a good solution. We needed to work with amateur radio instead of against amateur radio. And so I established a liaison with the ARRL, in particular Ed Hare. We worked together to try to craft this solution. So he knew what was out in the marketplace and what was not working very well at that point, and we crafted this this better solution in a partnership environment. We've also been involved in proactively informing hams. So that's important to me, not to be a surprise to the marketplace or your neighborhood, but to be able to go in and work with hams on a proactive basis so you understand what the system is going to do and what it's not going to do and how it's not going to interfere and so forth. We're also concerned with being public service protected. You know, we didn't want to interfere with great gobs of the HF spectrum, so we wanted to protect that as well. We also have some vision of how to protect the shortwave listener spectrum as well. For Motorola, primary in my mind, the number one priority really was to have a good public image. I didn't want this to hurt Motorola. You know, I've been a long-term Motorola, had a lot of loyalty with the company, and I wanted it to be done right for Motorola as well. We wanted to be honest and have no denial of issues. It was upfront. We wanted to be absolutely in compliance of FCC issues and emissions. We could not cheat the rules. We had to do it right. We have a lot of public safety customers at Motorola, so we didn't want to antagonize them with something that was interfering with their spectrum. We also had utility customers, so we had to please that side of the fence as well. We wanted a good consumer product for high-speed internet. We really all needed to do the right thing. If you've lived through TVI, we didn't want to create another one. We wanted to create a good solution so that you could have both internet and ham radio operating together. Here's some baseline definitions. The FCC Part 15, and it's a general set of rules that talk about non-interference. It doesn't talk specifically about amateur radio per se. It's all about unlicensed radio users sharing licensed spectrum on a non-interference basis. There's two categories of BPL that are important to understand. One is in-house BPL, and that's been out in the marketplace since 2000, and it will provide an Ethernet connection from one side of your house to another, all inside the house. So that's been out there in the marketplace for quite a while. It does use the HF spectrum, 4.5 to 21 megahertz, and it has carriers within the amateur spectrum turned off. Ed Hare was involved in some of that early testing to make sure that that was part of the firmware that was in the HomePlug technology. HomePlug is what Motorola uses, so it's a very good starting point for not interfering with amateur radio because it has carriers within the amateur spectrum turned off. Now, the big hubbub and so forth with BPL is really the Access BPL. That uses outside wiring, which act like antennas and so forth. There's new FCC rules, which will be effective July 7th. So actually, back in October of 2004, the FCC released the rules, but there was a grandfather clause. So the manufacturers and so forth could continue to do what they were doing until July 7th of this year. At that point, they have to have certification, which is apply to the FCC with technical information and get back a certification number showing that they've met the rules for emissions and so forth. Access BPL is defined in the rules as 1.7 megahertz to 80 megahertz. Not everyone's using that whole spectrum today, but that's what it's defined as. Access BPL really covers all forms of typical installation. So it's overhead wiring, underground wiring, and it's in the house. And if you think about something that you have up on the pole and inside the house, now they're operating together, so there's all these different combinations. There are specific emissions testing that you have to do, and it's labor intensive. So manufacturers like Motorola and others, to be able to deliver product after July 7th, have to do a lot of emissions testing and do it right and document it and send it to the FCC and wait for a response before they can continue to install product after July 7th. The Access BPL rules specifically target protection for public safety. Amateur radio is not mentioned at all in the FCC rules. There are comments and so forth on the side, but when you actually look at the rules, there's only specific protection for public safety. Amateur radio is protected just under the normal standard Part 15 rules for non-interference. For the history of BPL, there's been a lot of fear and misunderstanding. Some of the early technology didn't work very well, created a lot of interference. There were some poor installations where the vendors were learning how to do it and were causing interference along the way. And there were no fixed rules or processes. So people would go out there and put something up, and maybe it had an experimental license, maybe it didn't. They were all under the umbrella of Part 15, but there was a lot of chaos, a lot of uncertainty. You know, what are you supposed to do? Who are you supposed to tell? And so forth. The FCC, in the meantime, has not been driven by technology issues. They've been driven by economic issues. And so the rules take some of that lack of technical understanding into account. So that's created some problem in the past. Most of the early BPL systems were developed by relatively small companies trying to seize an opportunity. While they're doing that, they're fearful of competition, so they're not releasing a lot of information. So you as an amateur radio operator, when you're trying to work with a BPL company, well, what spectrum are you using? What modulation are you running? What are your emissions? Well, no, we really can't tell you that. Don't have to tell you that. A lot of hiding and concealment of information. This is an important step because the certification, they have to provide emission testing documentation to the FCC, which then becomes public record. Once that happens, the amateur radio community and the ARRL, you know, Ed Hare is going to be looking over those documents very carefully to make sure that they're all compliant. There's sort of going to be a step function from maybe compliant today to have to be tomorrow. Now, is the FCC going to be stringent about enforcing it? Well, we'll see. They haven't been so far. The public record of emission testing will be a very important transition into the future. These new rules are affecting delivery to the marketplace. It will affect all manufacturers. It will have consistent rule set and processes for all of those. Now, they're not always stringent. There may be issues and so forth, but the emissions testing will be public, and that will be important. Some manufacturers are starting to work with the ARRL. DS2 recently did some notch filter testing at ARRL, and it was in QST. Some manufacturers and BPL providers are still in denial. Well, that's still a problem for amateur radio, and Manassas, Virginia is maybe a good example of, no, we don't have interference, but it's documented, it's there.
You're listening to a talk by 2006 Technical Excellence Award winner Dick Illman, AH6EZ/W9, about Motorola's solution to the BPL interference problem. We'll conclude his talk in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, supported by Merle Heinlein, KB9NOH. See his bio on QRZ.com. We'll be right back.
There has not been very much enforcement activity by the FCC. The Cottonwood, Arizona system has gone off the air, but at one point the FCC said you had to work with the amateur radio community. Well, it didn't quite work out, and that pilot's now off the air. The Briarcliff Manor, New York system, for example, has documented interference, and the FCC hasn't done anything yet. There are some issues. There also is some recent activity in Congress, the H.R. 5252, 146.52, easy to remember. And it has now been passed on to the Senate. And this is going to be some language that requires the FCC to go out and study the technical issues with emissions for BPL. It'll be an important step if it passes the Senate. There's information about this on the ARRL main website. So, the future of Access BPL. At this point, the pilots have completed to a great extent. So the technology has been proven. It's frozen a little bit. There's legislation that's either enabling or disabling BPL. Now, some municipal governments are saying no. Some states are saying yes. The PUCs are saying yes and no. There was a big ruling out in California recently. So there's legislative efforts going on to either hurt or harm BPL. The data rates are increasing. So today's home plug and this equipment here happens to be 14 megabits of raw data. It's headed towards 85 megabit and 200 megabit. The 200 megabit happens to use a little bit more spectrum, 2 to 28 megahertz. So more impact for 80 meters, more impact for 10 meters. Some things to pay attention to. Utilities are becoming more interested in a smart grid. So initially BPL was, how do I deliver consumer internet and how can I make a profitable business doing that? Well, the utilities and technology has been evolving so that now the utilities are more driven by creating a smart grid, being able to do automatic meter reading, be able to switch reclosures remotely, doing location and fault diagnostics. So there's definitely a shift in the focus from the utilities to put in your backbone, get that working, and then, oh, by the way, have some gravy, some extra profit on the side for consumer internet. So that's important to realize that all of the BPL solutions can do that, provide connectivity across the grid, but the utilities are less focused on consumer internet per se. Now, a BPL provider, an entrepreneur, can come in and request access to the utility lines, and the utilities generally have to accept that request and provide space on the communication space on the poles. But suffice it to say, the utilities themselves are less interested in consumer internet. There's also some multi-unit dwelling stuff. You know, if you go to a hotel and try to operate QRP with a wire out the window, which I do sometimes, there may be some BPL interference if you have a wrong solution. And that's an internal, that's an in-house system, so you're not on the utility side of the meter, you're inside the premises of a hotel or an apartment. So that's a new system that's coming online. And really, the future of access BPL is really a niche. You know, if you're too far away from a central office for DSL, you don't have cable in your community, now wireless technology and BPL can be rural and suburban solutions for you. What RF spectrum does the Access BPL use? What I did here was create a little chart that shows some recent quantities of licenses in the FCC database. So, for example, I found 729,000 amateur radio licensees, VHF, UHF, HF. In that HF spectrum, there's 2,800 FCC licensees, public safety, so forth. And these are the typical users that are in that space. So it's occupied. Some of the Access BPL solutions are up in the 30 to 50 megahertz range, and there's 36,000 FCC licenses up there. But by comparison, most of the FCC licensees for public safety, commercial, industrial, and public service are up in the VHF, UHF, 800, 900 megahertz range. So the Access BPL, as defined, 1.7, 80 megahertz, spans a couple of those different segments. So let's go into how the Access BPL spectrum is used. Here's the home plug 1.0, so that's today's product, 4.5 to 21 megahertz and 14 megabits of raw. As part of today's solution, current technologies, it's a competitor of Motorola, uses 32 to 48 megahertz, and ambient is also using the 30 to 50 megahertz range. So there's some potential impact to public safety users in the 30 to 50. Doesn't impact amateur radio at all, but just to know that this is the current technology solution. So current is using home plug 1.0 to get into the house, and they're using 30 to 50 megahertz to transverse the medium voltage wires. And that's an important thing to recognize. The early solutions used HF spectrum on the medium voltage wiring. A lot of interference, big, long antennas. You know, what do you expect? The manufacturers are gradually recognizing that. Current has recognized that. Ambient has recognized that. Motorola is not using the medium voltage wires for anything. So that's an important thing. If you can avoid HF use of the medium voltage wires, your solution is much more likely to not cause interference. So here's the speed improvement for home plug turbo, they call it, 85 megabit, same spectrum, same carriers. And here's the home plug AV. So that's the home plug standard name for the 200 megabit product. DS2 has some 200 megabit chipsets out there too that are not home plug per se. So there is different technology out there as well. Each of these technologies, if the installations are not done well, nice, tight, clean, non-rusty, non-corroded connections to the power lines, you can end up with harmonics. And we've seen that out in the field in our installations. So here we are measuring our primary emissions and going, okay, everything's fine. And wait a minute, we've got some harmonics, some extra energy up in the 30 to 50 megahertz range where we didn't want it. We've developed a bunch of new steps for making sure that all those connections are well done. We don't have harmonics where we don't want them. For interference to HF licensees, here's some aspects of AccessBPL versus the HF users. So AccessBPL has co-channel notches. So for amateur radio, if they have a notch and they're turning off the carrier within the 40-meter band, you're going to receive less interference because the emissions are somewhere else. If you have hardware notch filters like Motorola has, now you have no bidirectional interference, no interference to ham radio or from ham radio. If you have fixed OFDM carriers, which that's what HomePlug is, it has specific places where it puts emissions, you would need to have some frequency agility to get away from the interference. And if you're a public safety user and you're licensed to a particular channel, you might not have that option. Well, the consumer data flow is maybe more during the evening hours, less at night. Maybe it's more during the day. It changes throughout the day. You may have someone that's doing streaming video constantly. As opposed to HF users, if you're public safety, you might have less frequent use. Maybe you only test your network once a month and so forth. Amateur radio, you may have frequent use. So if you have frequent consumer data and frequent use of HF, well, maybe you have some conflicts. If you're using the wide area medium voltage wiring for BPL, that's where you have the mobile users affected. So if you drive around the neighborhood or you commute from your home to your office and you're driving down a medium voltage wire, that's where you're likely to have the interference. Statistically speaking, is BPL going to be installed at your neighbor's house? Probably not. But if it's installed on the medium voltage wire all the way across town, if you're a mobile user, you're very likely to be affected. That's most of the interference to amateur radio today is really mobile use, because whether it's a matter of convenience or whether it's a matter of intent, most of the BPL solutions for people's houses don't happen to be installed next door to an amateur radio operator. But if you have localized wiring on the low voltage side, and that's part of Motorola's solution, the only thing you would be affecting, except on a transitory basis, if you drove past someone's house and you had 50 feet of road that had some interference, not that Motorola has emissions in the amateur radio band, but if you were a public safety user, you might have a few seconds as you drove by.
Dick Illman, AH6EZ/W9, a principal engineer behind Motorola's solution to the BPL interference problem and 2006 recipient of the DARA Technical Excellence Award. We excerpted from his talk given last month at the Dayton Hamvention. If you wish to contact Dick, his email address is dick.illman@motorola.com. That's dick.illman. Illman, spelled I-L-L-M-A-N, at Motorola.com. If you missed the first two programs in this series, you'll find them on the RAIN archive page on RAIN's new website, www.therainreport.com. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990 through 2006, RAIN, all rights reserved. I'm Blair Alper, KA9 SEQ.